20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. Justice Freaking Mosqueda is here with us, J-U-M-O-S-Q on social media, acmepackingcompany.com, a go-to every single day, but especially in the offseason as well, and especially as we are in defensive coordinator search 2026. They've got constant updates. Justice, I know I'm there out there every day, but before we get into all of that other stuff, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Indiana's up right now as we're recording this. I can't remember when it was that Oregon played Indiana, but it was like either late October or something like that, or early November. And I was like, that team is going to win the national title. I don't have to care about the fate of the Oregon Ducks anymore. And they're just steamrolling. The Southerners are pissed. The Southerners thought Indiana's losing its first game to Alabama. No, this team is good. And yep. Because I've been bouncing, talking to like agents and stuff like that. Indiana's DC is making like $3 million a year. Their O-line coach is Wisconsin's old O-line coach. I didn't know that. Yeah, dude, they're a machine. They're a machine. Like, they're not going away anytime soon. They'll probably get better, which is scary. Not next year.
Funny. Actually. It's funny that they like figured out the hack of like, hey, let's get the 24-year-olds. Let's get the 24-year-olds. Everyone else is recruiting the 5-star 18-year-olds. Yeah. Let's get the 24-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of it too. Yeah, I mean, what a weird spot for the entire sport.
Yes.
The money, the NIL, the transfer portal, all that. But people come here to talk about the Green Bay Packers, Andy.
I know. Football's fun, though. I like talking football, and it is an interesting conversation. You knew somebody was going to find sort of a new way to, you know, kind of take advantage of the rules in college football and just put a team together like this. And kudos to Indiana for making it happen, up 10-0 as we're recording this right now. Let's talk some Packers since you segued us perfectly. There's a billion places that we could start. We'll talk Jeff Hafley, defensive coordinators, Bears losing, et cetera. But I still think the most important noteworthy thing that's happened since we talked last is the fact that Matt LaFleur is for sure getting a contract extension / it's done. The team's not going to announce it. At least they haven't done extension announcements in the past. So I don't think it's going to, but we know it. It's been reported various places. Brian Gutekunst, Russ Ball also looking towards extensions. Domovsky was on ESPN Milwaukee basically saying that Ed Policy went to each of them individually, said, I want to extend you, want to extend you, want to extend you. And then they got all three of them together to make sure that everyone was on the same page, that everyone felt that they could bring the Super Bowl to Green Bay together. They all said yes. And the rest was history. And now they're just kind of, I'm sure, dotting the I's and crossing the T's. But the powers that be in Goody, Ball, and LaFleur are back in Green Bay for the foreseeable future, it would seem.
Not surprised. Glad they got it done. It seemed like the TikTok of it is weird, right? Not the social media app, but like, the journalism term, right? So like the minute by minute type thing, right? So like,
yeah.
Goot, I never thought had a chance of bingo. Same. Because when I started poking around mid season, when things looked bad, that Carolina Eagles stretch, right? Cause that's, I keep pointing to that. Cause I think that was the only time where it felt like, oh, Matt might be the reason why we're losing some of these games, and they were still tight, all that stuff. But then when I started poking around, people were like, no, like Goot, they could have gotten the Goot deal. Like they had the numbers, like they didn't want to announce them at different times or anything like that. They wanted it, you know, kind of to your point of what you said, like they wanted the whole battery at the same time, right? Getting extended at the same time. But they could have gotten the Goot deal done in like the summer. Like all sides were pretty aware of that type of stuff. Like, everyone would have been cool with running it back. The LaFleur thing, it really did seem like it was about money just because the coaching market changed so much. Like, we brought up these numbers before, and I think Silverstein's written about them now, which is cool. But, like, first-time head coaches, unless you were some sort of like if you were coming up from the college level or something like that, like Chip Kelly made a bunch of money when he jumped up from the college level, stuff like that, right? Pete Carroll, all that stuff. I guess Pete Carroll was a retread technically. First time NFL head coaches were making about $5 million per year when Matt signed his first deal in 2019. And that's kind of held for the most part. But then you had the market explode last offseason, right? With Ben Johnson getting 13 per and Liam Cohen, I can't remember if he got 12 or 11, something like that. And the Cohen thing was really because of how bad the Jaguars botched that search. It wasn't necessary because Ben Johnson was, you know, the bell of the ball for 2 years in a row, right? Yep. He could basically demand whatever the heck he wanted. Liam Cohen was a little less than that, but the Jaguars had this problem where they started interviewing candidates and every single one of them came back to them and said like, yeah, I'll take the job if you fire Balky. And Balky was, you know, under the assumption he was going to come back and be the general manager with Jacksonville. And then they had to pivot. They couldn't find someone who would take the job with him. They end up giving Cohen a bunch of money to sign super late into the process. I think – so we're recording this January 19th. I think the Jaguars GM search didn't even start until the 22nd last year, which is crazy. Crazy. They fumbled it, right?
They botched it big time, yeah.
Yeah. So I think from – so this is from like talking to – coach representation, right? People who work as agents, right? I think athletes first, for the most part, was like, hey, we have to at least beat the Ben Johnson number, right? Like, it's going to be hard for – like, because CAA, everyone else, right, is going to come back to their clients and say, like, look, athletes first has a coach who has the second best record ever in the first 7 years of his NFL head coaching career. And they still can't even get him more than what Ben Johnson got
as a new coach.
Right. Yeah. So I think that was a contributing factor. I think also, you know, per all the reporting too, right? All sides wanted to get this thing done. Green Bay wanted Matt to be the head coach. Matt wanted to be the head coach in Green Bay. I think the years was important. And I know Spoons made it as like a, it's about the years. It's not about the money thing, but
it's about both.
ultimately the years does become money, right? Because what you're yes. talking about is a buyout, right? You're nothing stopping you for if, and I cannot get the numbers on the LaFleur thing. And it's driving me nuts. Cause I thought I would actually be able to get them. And I've been basically hit with, that is not your story to report. Like you, there are merit badges that have been doing us favors that we have to get back to. You don't get to be the one who gets this one. Like, all right, fine.
You got to start doing some more favors, my friend.
No, that's the last thing I want to do, dog. No, that stuff sucks so much. I know people who are national reporters, NFL and college football, and like, dude, the last thing I want to do.
You're going to start becoming, you're coming on the Pack-A-Day podcast and being like, start stomping for certain players that I'm like, why is he saying so-and-so is such an amazing player over and over. He's been talking about, Kamal Haddon for the last seven episodes of how amazing Kamal Haddon is. What is going on? What is happening?
Yeah. I'd rather not have, you know, the like NASCAR, you know, sponsor patches on my chest. Yes. That's no fun to me. But I do think the years end up becoming about the money, right? Because it's about being able to pull a trigger and calling it quits on something if things go wrong. Like John Harbaugh just signed a $100 million contract with the Giants, right?
Guaranteed.
There's no promise that they're still going to want him in year three, right?
Nope.
But what they're saying is, okay, we'll buy you out if things go wrong. Like there's the whole thing with years and LaFleur, and I bet he probably got either a 3 or 4 year extension.
Just to clarify, because I think this is an interesting sort of context slash just noteworthy thing here. Would you expect it to be 3 or 4 year extension on top of the 1 year that he already has, or three to 4 years at the end of the day? So 4 to 5 years total.
Yeah.
Three to 4 years.
I think he has to get four. I think he has to get four. I mean, that.
Well, if Jeff Hafley just got five, and again, money's different.
Yeah, he's gonna make less than.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different situation for sure. I mean, Hafley doesn't have the track record that Matt does. I know the fans are going crazy. The fans have fired everyone. I understand that. Everyone else in the Packers organization is like, we're doing really well. We like our process. Everyone else around the league is like, you guys are doing pretty well. We like you guys' process. How about we get our GM and our head coach from there? And Packers fans are just like, just white knuckles. Ah. Just like the funniest thing is the crazy accountability. Guys, they think you go into the playoffs, you lose a close game. That's fine. They're not going to fire a head coach for that.
Yeah.
When they fired head coaches, it's Sherman going like what? He was like 4-12.
4-12.
But the bigger problem with Sherman is he demolished that roster. Yeah. That was more about like the
GM side was important there too.
Yes, yep. The GM side was very important there because the Packers don't think they don't think that they got the foundation back for like draft and develop until like I think it was 3 years after Sherman. Like they had the one really good Favre year where they went like 12-4, but then they had another like losing season after that. Like they thought it took them a while to get back to zero. And then McCarthy had what, back-to-back losing seasons? He had a losing season and then basically got another losing season. They called it after the Arizona game.
And you lost to Josh Rosen in the snow with the playoffs on the line. And
So like guys, yeah, if they lose in the play, they're going to think they're fine. The expectations here are hilarious relative to the rest of the league. Like everyone else that I talked to is like, there's no way they're like actually going to do it though. And I'm like, well,
which was the national narrative.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
From like the Mina Kimes to the Dan Orlovskis to the, you just go on and on. They're like Sam Munson. They're like, nobody understood the whole Matt LaFleur context of potentially getting fired.
No. When I thought things got shaky was when both Spoons and Huber, who again, like they're the guys who get all the scoops on the beat. Like when they came out with their columns and they were like, yeah, it's time to move on. I was like, do they know something?
They know something. Yeah.
But then all the feedback I got was like, no, they're still trying to make this done. I mean, did we record last Tuesday night?
I'd have to go back and look, but it was around there. Yeah. Either Tuesday, Wednesday, Tuesday, something like that.
Tuesday or Thursday. And the TikTok of it was people thought it got really close right before we were going to record. And that's why I was really confident about it. To the point where like I had alarms set for very early in the morning. Cause I was told like, yeah, if they get it done, they're probably not going to like news dump it. They don't want it to seem like a news dump by announcing it super late in the middle of the night. So I was like, oh my God, it's going to happen early in the morning. I set the alarms, all that stuff. And then no news. I'm like trying to figure out what's happening. And they're like, yeah, well, they kind of like agreed to everything except for the money. I'm like, dude, it hasn't been this been the whole issue the whole time. I don't get it.
Yeah.
There was like weird parts where like, I don't know. I got some info where it was like, basically like Matt for the first time had been considering like what it meant to move his family out of Green Bay. Right. If he did want to sign a 5-year, $20 million per year guaranteed contract, you know, get the $100 million guaranteed and go somewhere else.
How do you not have that internal conversation just as like a human, like, right? Like,
well, I think just things were moving and then they stopped moving. Right. And then when things stop moving, different questions start, but then it seemed by like Thursday, things had picked up and started going well again. And then that's when we got the, I think Spoons had it, the LaFleur Goot policy all going out for drinks and stuff like that. And so I think there was like a little lull in conversation, but that was the only time where things seemed to get any spooky at all. Outside of that, it just seemed like they were like, okay. And then talking through the details, all that stuff.
Yeah, it felt like for a while there, it was definitely going to get done, and it was just a matter of time. You know, obviously the reporting from Schefter and Rappaport even earlier in that week was that way, and then there was more kind of buzz on the back end that it was just kind of a matter of time. And but you still kind of wanted to hear it. We did record last Wednesday, so it was Wednesday night when we were recording. And just going back to Goody for a second too, that one to me was the most obvious. Like you talked about earlier of how you know the Packers have a certain way of doing things and things like that. they've gone from Ron, like the Ron Wolf Foundation.
We have not hired an outside general manager since in my lifetime. I have gray hair, right?
The Ron Wolf,
but some of them.
The Ron Wolf Foundation, they might sort of remodel the top every once in a while. The Ron Wolf Foundation that he has built is still fully intact in Green Bay and not looking like it's going anywhere anytime soon. Never. They've gone from him. I know there was the little bit with Sherman, but Ted Thompson, and then obviously
they kept all those dudes underneath Sherman. Like that was
yes.
And they did not like Sherman. They didn't like a second of it. And the mentality there is never again. Never again will that ever happen to us, right? So there's no appetite to, and I mean this sincerely, like ever move away from this front office structure. Ever, right? Goode's been here since 99, right? Sullivan had been here since like 2002, right? Like it's, no.
And
They fundamentally believe the team is still in Green Bay because draft and develop, which is the only way that you can win in Green Bay. And they think that they're the best at it. Period. True believers, top down.
Yep.
So people now are like, well, they hired, or they kept LaFleur. They must be firing Goode. Like, guys, there's no ambition for them to, like, there's no appetite for them to ever move from this front office structure. When Ted isn't here because Ted got a neurological disorder and he died. And when they had to replace Ted, they said, we have to go find our new Ted. The only outside candidate outside of Green Bay's building that they looked at was Schneider, who had been in Green Bay for forever in the same way that Ted Thompson was for forever before he went and was basically Holmgren's like deputy GM.
Because what it was like, it was Goody, it was Russ Ball, it was Schneider, and then did Elliot Wolf get a? I can't remember if Elliot Wolf got a shot or not.
I think Wolf was still here, and then that's when he left for like the Browns, right? Which that's another funny one, dude. People were like, "Well, look how good Elliot Wolf is. We should have hired him." All this stuff. He had his wings clipped last offseason. Vrabel's the one who stirs the drink in New England, and Vrabel brought his own guy from Tennessee and gave him Elliot Wolf's old title. And he was basically like, look, Elliot, you can keep your job. This guy is standing behind you the entire time, making sure that you're doing what I'm saying. Like, Elliot, I don't even think Elliot has the full GM title yet. I think he has the same title that John Eric Sullivan had here in Green Bay.
The other thing, too, I was going through this today as a on our members chat. So it's on Wikipedia, it says executive vice president of player personnel and de facto general manager is what it says.
I mean, Wikipedia. They haven't had a general manager since Bill, I think.
But if you look at his drafting, Elliot Wolf's, it's like they got Drake May right, which was the most obvious selection in the history of the world at that point. And they got Booty and DeMario Douglas as like sixth round wide receivers, like, which is pretty good.
Booty was like a off-field risk discount. Too.
Yeah.
What the situation was with that.
And I know they took Campbell this year, which was like, he's been up and down, maybe more down than up as of late, but that was basically like an obvious pick too. And everything else has not really worked out from a draft standpoint for Elliot Wolf at this point.
I mean, their offensive line has kind of been a mess. I mean, really it's Vrabel. Like again, it's just Vrabel.
Free agency has been good for them for sure.
Vrabel stirs the drink there. Yeah. They had a ton in free. They're going to have a ton more in free agency. They didn't spend it all last year. Because they looked at the market and were like, there's not enough talent. We have a bunch of cap space. It's not worth it to spend it in this market. So,
can you imagine Green Bay just picked up Milton Williams instead of Hobbs and Aaron Banks? That would have been fun.
I mean, we wouldn't have because of Wyatt, right? But, yeah.
I get it. But even still, would have been nice. I'm a huge believer in that we need to go on a
tangent. I thought the Banks deal was always bad. I think the Hobbs deal was a pretty – like maybe the worst example of self-scouting. I think the team was like, yeah, Evan Williams did good his rookie year, but like, is he actually going to hang around? Like we're probably going to have McKinney and Bullard play safety. And then we need to go get a nickel and let's go pay for Hobbs. And then they get into camp. They're like, no, yeah, Evan Williams is a good football player. Why were you guys trying to put him on the bench? That was dumb.
Yep. It's still crazy that like, not only in camp were like Bullard and Williams like fighting for like spots.
Beginning
and then,
of the year.
in the season. Yeah, in the season, it went into where like they were split, and it's like we talked about it at length at times of like, why is Evan Williams ever coming off the field? That seems absurd. Why would that ever happen?
The Ravens game, I get it, because the Ravens, like, all they wanted to do was run with a backup quarterback in, and yeah, Tyler Huntley, Derrick Henry, like, you. It's a different kind of matchup than what you're going to get from basically any other NFL team. I get playing below safety, man, but outside of that, like, yeah, man, it should have been obvious Evan Williams was going to be a starter this year.
Any other thoughts on Matt, Goody, Russ Ball extending together, same trio, same powers that be, anything else in that realm? So we're expecting 3 to 4 year extension around what? 14, 15, 16 million, somewhere in that range per year.
I would guess 14. Cause if the Packers were really dragging there, I bet Athletes First would have said yes to 14. For it to drag out a full week, I think it probably would have to come close there. Couple of things on that. So that's probably a $6 million discount relative to what he could have gotten if he hit the open market, which Green Bay seemed like they didn't want him to hit the open market. Right.
Right.
Which again, another sign that it's about money. There was, I think it was Spoons again, who reported that Russ Ball also reports directly to Ed Policy. That is something that I didn't realize. I thought it was just Goot and LaFleur.
No, it was Russ Ball too. Yep.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's kind of, yeah, those are pretty much all my thoughts on that. I mean, I was just waiting for it. I was out of the house when it actually happened. I was pissed.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this directly. Was there ever a point in season, playoffs, etc., where you were, it's time to move on from Matt?
Well, the Eagles Panther stretch where the team couldn't run the ball, the yak stuff wasn't working. All he wanted to do was throw in cutters, and then, you know, the Eagles figured out like, hey, if we just put our hands up, right, we could stop a lot of these in cutters and quick game stuff. So the Packers had to throw outside breaking routes, which again, Matt can do it. It's in the playbook, but it's not the first tool in the toolbox that it goes to. So at that point, I was scared a little bit. Well, I'm scared, worried for him. I was like, you guys got to make a change. But no, I mean, they started doing it. The offense humming, all that stuff. I mean, I know like the offensive line played very poorly against the Bears. Against their blitzes specifically, which they had been good at for like the first 2.5 games that they played them. And then the second half just played it like crap. To me, if like heads on a stick, all that stuff, like if we need blood, right? Like I'm going to O-line coach, I'm going to linebackers coach first and second. So
we'll get there. I want to get there eventually. The other big news on Monday is that Jeff Hafley did officially get hired by the Miami Dolphins. He is their head coach. It is.
I hit you up about this at 5 on Sunday. I said, I think tomorrow is the Hafley day, because what happened was Miami pushed 2 minority candidates' interviews earlier to the point where they want them done first thing in the morning, and they had those people fly in on Sunday instead of Monday. So, like, that is the universal sign. I know this because I talk to coaches and agents. That is the universal sign of we have already found our new head coach, and we are now trying to get through the Rooney Rule red tape, right? That happened in Jacksonville when they started the Liam Cohen search super late and or try to bring back Liam Cohen, right? Because I think they had an initial interview, and then they had to do the in-persons. And they were like, look, we got to get Cohen installed so that we can go after a GM, right? So they were like, let's speed this thing up. Patrick Graham, the defensive coordinator for the Raiders, was the guy that the Jaguars used. And then he also was one of the guys in Miami. They brought in 2 dudes, the DC from Detroit too. So as soon as an agent slid that to me and was like, hey, they're changing interview schedules, I was like, sweet. This is going to happen on Monday. Like, I don't tell you guys all my scoops, dude. I don't tell you all that. Tom, I told you about Tom 3 hours before kickoff for the playoff game.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I got an hour and a half before Spoons got it, and I was pretty happy about that. Yeah, I had someone tell me, it was like, Tom's been out, and the coaching staff knows that he's out since like 2 days ago. I was like, ah, crap.
Not ideal. Yeah, that was not, I did not appreciate, I appreciated the news, but I was not happy when I heard the news. I'll just put it that way.
No.
But yeah, so
how many, I don't think it mattered that much. Sheed was the one who was crapping the bed. So
it might have mattered because they might have been able to bench Sheed to put in Jordan Morgan in that situation.
True. All right, fair. Yeah. They haven't done it all year.
I know, but he was that bad in that game. He was that bad in that game where if you see that at halftime, I think if Jordan Morgan's sitting on the bench, you have to at least consider it to move to Morgan at halftime in that game, I think.
Maybe. I mean, I would have benched CJ Stroud this weekend too.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting some goofy performances this playoffs, man.
It would, not to go on another tangent here too, but the fact that Jordan Love is getting any sort of anything, or that is not getting like universal love and respect for how he plays, when did anyone watch the quarterback play? It just feels to me, and I understand Favre to Rodgers to Love. I understand all of it wholeheartedly, but like, it just feels like everyone has an ideal in their mind of what like the best quarterback play in the league looks like. And then I just want people to go out and not that CJ Stroud's the best in the league or anything, but watch CJ Stroud, watch Josh Allen throw picks again this week. Watch what like is actually happening in these games. Matthew Stafford, Jordan Love, Jordan Love just played against a bad Bears defense. Did you watch Matthew Stafford play against the Bears defense this week? It wasn't exactly like taking candy from a baby. And Jordan Love went through it with four touchdowns and no picks with pretty relative ease. And I get it wasn't perfect. There's a couple of things he could have done better in that game, but like, my, are we seeing what quarterback play in the playoffs looks like and what Jordan Love is capable of and doing? And the fact that A, you lost that game when he played that way is just insane. But yeah, Jordan, give that man his flowers because he was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Jordan. I'm super not worried about Jordan moving forward.
Last of like, yeah, 99 problems, but the QB ain't one in this situation. We'll be right back. Hey friends, the big game is almost here, and there's no better way to cash in during America's biggest sporting event than Prize Picks, where it always feels good to be right. And since the big game is right around the corner, it also means that it's your last chance to get into the football action before next season. So close the season out with Prize Picks by getting $50 instantly in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, we've been talking about Prize Picks all season long, and what I've really enjoyed are the stories from fans who've played Daily Fantasy for the first time, who've won a big pick, and who've told me how much they enjoy playing Prize Picks. Now, I've heard some awesome winning stories all season long, and you still have time to get in this football season to get some big wins with Prize Picks. Now, with Prize Picks, you don't need to wait until next year's fantasy draft to keep playing fantasy. Prize Picks lets you play fantasy football every week, even in the playoffs. Pick your favorite players and win when they hit their projections every week, no draft required. So join millions of users and sign up for America's number one sports app, Prize Picks. And right now, you can download the Prize Picks app and use code Packaday to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. That's code Packaday to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Of course, Jeff Hafley, again, just to go back to that, does get the defensive coordinator position. Any concerns of poaching from Green Bay's roster? Of like anything that you would be concerned about losing if Hafley took coaches with him?
Sorry, I was checking my phone.
Oh, you're good, man.
It's a busy day. So the two names that always come up when I talk to agents about a potential Packers opening, because right, like everyone thought Hafley at least had a chance to grab one last year, right? Which meant that this year, pretty much a done deal, right? I think when there were eight openings, he had interviewed for six of them, and one of them wasn't even a real opening because the Giants were like, give me Harbaugh right now. We'll pay whatever. Harbaugh, you can clip shown if you want. You can name whoever GM, whatever you want. The two names that come up be more of convenience than anything else, right? It's DeMarcus Covington, who used to be the Patriots defensive coordinator. He's now our defensive line and run game coordinator. And then Derek Ansley, who's our passing game coordinator. Before here, he was with the Los Angeles Rams. I do think that the Packers probably want some level of coaching staff continuity, which again, I know that fans are going to be pissed about that. Like, they do not want to pay all these buyouts just because a defensive coordinator left for a promotion. Like, when they fired McCarthy, they kept Pettine, and the condition was whoever becomes the head coach, you're stuck with Pettine because we do not want to, we don't want to trigger his buyout right now. Right.
Yep.
So just because Halfley is gone, I don't think it's top down new staff on no. defense. Right.
I don't think so either.
There's thoughts that either one of Covington or Ansley could be DC, the next DC in Green Bay, or the next DC, you know, for Halfley. I haven't talked to people that, well, I talked to one person that much about like what a Halfley staff would look like. It was more like ahead of time, right? Like not specifically Miami. It was, hey, if Halfley leaves, who do you think that he would take? And like those two names were popular because they're two of the only like veteran coaches in Green Bay, like guys that have any experience outside of Green Bay in a on-field role. But I don't think like the Packers are necessarily committed to that. I did think it was interesting. The first one is Christian Parker, right? So that's the first interview.
Reported interview. Yep.
First reported interview, Christian Parker. So Christian Parker got his start in the NFL 2019. He was a quality control guy for Mike Pettine's defense. That was Matt's first staff, right, as a head coach in Green Bay. He served in that role for 2 years, went to Denver, actually coached under three different head coaches. So he was there for Fangio, Hackett, and then also Sean Payton. And then he ended up going to Philadelphia, becoming their passing game coordinator, defensive backs coach, where he coached under Fangio again. So last 2 years, the Eagles, they finished second in passer rating. He was the passing game coordinator for that stuff. I don't know what he is necessarily because, you know, we're talking about a first-time defensive coordinator. It is sort of a mystery box, and, you know, you don't know what you don't know type of thing if you go down that route. But the people that I know who work in Philadelphia are like, he's kind of like wunderkind guy. Like no one knows what it's going to be like when he's a defensive coordinator, but he does have a lot of respect. So I think that's a good sign. I don't know what he wants to run necessarily. I mean, he's been a Fangio guy twice. So
I would go get something around that. Yeah.
If we go the Fangio route, right. The problem is our last toe dip into the Fangio route, right, was Joe Barry. I think this is a very different circumstance, right? This is a guy who, this is a guy who grew up in college football, which they do a whole lot more match quarters, cover match stuff than the NFL does. Really, it's like the Fangio Staley McDonald train or tree. Like those are the only guys who live in it at the NFL level right now. So this is a guy who kind of had been bred and coached through this style of football, right? Sent two high safeties. Safeties are going to add into the box. You want tight coverage instead of loose coverage. So like Halfley's supposed to be loose coverage because it's supposed to help you get your eyes on the ball a lot faster and turn into turnovers. Now, has it happened? No, but that's what it's supposed to be. So it'll be tighter coverage downfield, not at the line of scrimmage. I know people have this in their head where they're like, I want a cornerback who's just going to jam and just choke a guy and delete him off. Like there's no one in the NFL doing that. So
nope.
Go watch some old film. I don't know.
Sertan, Christian Gonzalez are the closest things, and you still can't do it consistently in the NFL.
No, like the other four guys in coverage who have guys
can't do it.
Yeah, like you can't do it. The last real example of it was Rex Ryan, and it was they invested basically nothing at the defensive line and linebacker level, and just like, you know, if you think of it as like some sort of like point system, right? They put all their points in the DBs, right? You got Revis, you got Cromartie, you got stuff like that. And they just said, like, we'll figure it out. Like, the box, who cares? We don't need a pass rusher. We just need to stop the run because we're going to send six. You're not going to be able to block us. Since Rex Ryan, I don't think anyone's done that.
Nor do I expect many to.
So I think if we go Parker, there'll probably be a match quarters guy. Ansley worked under Brandon Staley.
Yep.
And they were a match quarters team too. So if it's Ansley, I would expect that. I'm not sure about Covington. I haven't paid attention to too much. I know Covington's gotten two interviews, right? He interviewed with the Jets. He interviewed with the Cowboys. Correct. Ansley hasn't gotten any yet. So
correct. As far as we know.
Yeah. I don't know if his name is going to be hot this cycle or not. I do know, like, when I talk to people, the teams that were aggressive were the Cowboys and Jets, and the Commanders and Giants are also, like, they've started their defensive coordinator search, but they're not in it as deep as the Cowboys and Jets are right now. So if names start coming off the list, I would assume Cowboys and Jets are going to be like the first and second hires out of the group.
And should be noted too, Jets would be under a defensive coach in Aaron Glenn already.
But he doesn't call plays.
Correct. But would be more second in command. The Cowboys is a true, you know, first in command defensive, you know, guy. And then again, I'm assuming Halfley's going to call plays in Miami.
I don't know. And I haven't been able to get an answer on that because he coaches from the booth, right? I mean, it's such a different job calling a defense from the booth.
That's true.
Than being a head coach of a football, like a NFL team. And
I wonder what he did in BC. I wonder if he called in BC if he let somebody else.
I mean, he's obviously on the sideline at BC, but I don't know if he was a play caller. Oh, that was the other thing. The other guy that I was told to watch out for, and this was from today.
For Green Bay?
No, for Halfley.
Okay.
I know people were like, maybe he'll take Duggan. It was the guy before Duggan. Yeah, Tim Lucado.
Yeah.
So he's Jacksonville's linebackers coach right now. He's working under Campanelli. He was the actual like full-time defensive coordinator for Halfley from 2020 to 2022. When he left for the NFL, that's when Duggan was co-defensive coordinator under Halfley. So I was told he's probably higher on the pecking order than Duggan would be. So if you guys were hoping for a Duggan way out of a Duggan buyout, it's probably not happening.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Unless they mutually agree, it would have to be like Campen did that, right? Like Campen and the Packers, he was still under contract with the Packers. The Packers didn't want to get rid of him because they're like, you're good enough that we don't want to deal with the buyout. But then he was like, what if we mutually agree and I'm allowed to leave for a lateral job? And then that's when he left for Cleveland and was associate head coach, I think.
Okay. That might be right. I think you might be right.
So maybe Duggan leaves laterally, but both sides would have to agree if Halfley doesn't want him, we're either stuck with him or we're cutting him. Like, I don't think he's going to have a big market elsewhere.
By the way, huge pain in a way. Like if Jeff Halfley would have got the defensive coordinator job somewhere last year, you've got Robert Saleh and Campanelli.
Yeah, we would have named Campanelli easily.
You think of Campanelli over Saleh? They would have went Campanelli over Saleh, you think?
That actually I don't know.
Either one.
I always forget that like Saleh was like actually in Green Bay.
In Green Bay, yeah. But either one, like either one would have been unbelievable, like an unbelievable hire. And then like a year later,
Saleh that much.
You don't think Saleh that much?
What is ethnic Dan Quinn to me? Where I'm like, you should be defensive line coach and vibes game coordinator. Why are you calling plays? That's how I feel. But other people might feel differently. Like, I think he can coach a front very well. After that, not so big of a fan, but that's just me. Right. Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that fans have asked about where they bring up. I don't think fans know, like, who is or isn't off the board, right? Because they see things like Flores, right? Like Flores is on the market.
Because he's an actual free agent, if you will.
But I don't.
Saleh is not. I see Saleh all the time.
Like Saleh, Campanelli,
not on
those
the board.
Guys are on the contract. They if the Packers attempted to request an interview for them, they would get blocked. And if they still talk to them after they got blocked, then they would get fined by the league and probably lose draft picks. Okay, that's how that works. So the guys who are on the table are guys who have gotten fired, you know, out of work in any sort of way, specifically just Flores, because he wanted to write out that contract in Minnesota. We could talk about Flores in a sec. I'd put a pin in that. Or potentially guys who are defensive coordinators for jobs that just fired their head coaches, right? So that would be Anthony Weaver in Miami, Zach Orr in Baltimore, Jim Schwartz in Cleveland, Denard Wilson in Tennessee, Patrick Graham in Vegas, right?
Yep.
Potentially one of those guys. But for the most part, unless you're on that list of names that I just read, or Flores, right? If the guy was a defensive coordinator in 2025, he is not available to the Packers in 2026.
The only thing I would add to that is that, so like, let's take, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this too, add in Dirty for Seattle, who's under contract as their defensive coordinator, but is second in command to McDonald and does not call plays in Seattle.
They can block it. How does he feel about it? So
that's my point.
I think
Seattle might block it, but if, because it's Green Bay, I don't know if they'd let him go to Green Bay and be like, yeah, he can go be the defensive coordinator there. But you could end up in a scenario where like Matt LaFleur was offensive coordinator in the Rams. Tennessee wanted to hire him to call plays. And so they let him go. I think if Steno, for example, if Steno got an opportunity somewhere to call plays, I think Matt would say, yes, you can go and call plays somewhere.
Two examples of this. First of all, Steno interviewed for teams last year, right? So like Seattle, the Packers, Steno's camp, all of them went in last offseason thinking Stanovich is going to be the play calling offensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks. And then Kubiak blew him away. But that was their line of thinking when they were setting up interviews. The other one is Getsy. Getsy was Matt's first choice to be offensive coordinator to replace Nathaniel Hackett. And then the Bears like kind of beat him to the point. Like the Packers could have named Getsy offensive coordinator before the Bears interviewed him if they wanted to. But the Bears was a play calling opportunity and the Packers wasn't. So Hackett got poached, Getsy got poached, and then he was like, okay, Steno.
I think Outen got poached too to be Hackett's offensive coordinator.
Yeah. I think Outen went because he knew Steno was going to be OC and was like,
I agree. He was probably like fourth in the pecking order in that scenario.
Exactly. Yeah. So teams think about it differently though, right? So like Matt is informed by his lived experience of McVay let me walk and go be a play caller. And that I only had to do that for 1 year before literally the Green Bay Packers came calling and I became a head coach. So I don't know if Seattle's going to see it that way. Maybe.
Maybe, we'll maybe not. Sorry, I did cut you off. Did you have anything else you want to? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to go through a list of names at this point. That was it.
Go for it.
Guys who I would keep an eye on, Aaron Whitecotton, Dallas Cowboys defensive line coach. He interviewed with the Cowboys. We actually brought him in last year for the defensive line vacancy. That job ended up going to DeMarcus Covington, but there's some interest there. He has a pretty solid track record, actually. Brian Flores, I don't think it's happening. I think there is a level of commitment that you have to have with Brian Flores, roster-wise, assistant-wise, pay-wise, all of that.
That'd be one I'll believe it when I see it. You'd probably be my first choice if you could make it happen, but I'll believe it when I see it.
One year shot in the arm, yes. But I don't think Green Bay thinks about it in one year time spans.
They don't.
Plus, Flores is kind of a flight risk, right?
For absolutely.
He's going to get a head coach. He should be a head coach right now.
Yes.
He should be a head coach. He should have been a head coach probably 3 years ago.
3 years ago,
he should have never lost the job in Miami. He said two also was true. Stuck. And he lost his job because he said Tua stuck. Like, and then he got the messed up situation where he ended up suing the league and some owners hate him, right? I mean, that's the Flores story. That's how you get – because all the other DCs, like, who stick around, it's like Spags or Fangio, like guys who are not going to get another head coaching opportunity and they're old and all that stuff. And then you have Flores who's just like the one young – good defensive coordinator who never gets the head coaching calls. And it's because of that stuff. I don't think Flores is going to happen. And we haven't even talked about like what it means to like leave Minnesota for Green Bay. Right. Like I think if he leaves, I mean, he could get a head coaching job still. Right. But then if he leaves, like, I mean, he could be the DC of the Cowboys and I'm sure Jerry would pay him $1 billion. Chris Harris, he's the interim defensive coordinator for the Jets. He actually interviewed for the defensive coordinator opening in 2021. So that was post Petten and Barry ended up getting it.
I talked about Chris Harris yesterday. you can't have the defense that got zero interceptions as the passing game coordinator and defensive coordinator and get a defensive coordinator job. And you just can't. I'm sorry. I don't care how much he, I don't care if he crushes the interview, if he was your number one candidate. I'm sorry. You cannot, in a must win Super Bowl sort of situation, bring in the guy that was the passing game coordinator for the first team that didn't record a single interception the year before. I'm out. I'm out on Chris Harris. Anyone else you name, I'm cool to listen to. I'm out on Chris Harris.
Okay. I'm cool with it. I'm just saying these are guys who have gotten interviews.
I did have them on my list, even despite that. So I'm with you.
These are guys who have gotten interviews elsewhere in the league and have Packers ties. We already talked about Christian Parker. Durante Jones doesn't really have ties to Green Bay, but he's probably, like, if you're talking about like young names to be like first time defensive coordinator, he's probably the hottest name. So he was pass game coordinator, defensive backs for the Vikings. He was kind of like a, I mean, everywhere they've gone, they've kind of blitzed a lot. So I think if you want like the next Flores, I think Durante Jones is probably the closest that you're going to get to the next Flores. But again, no ties to Green Bay, just throwing a name out there. Covington, we talked about him already. Denard Wilson, he was the DC for the Tennessee Titans. They're obviously going through a coaching change. He interviewed with the Washington Commanders in 2024. So the job that went to Halfley, he was one of the guys who interviewed in Green Bay. Jim Leonard, right? I feel like everyone in Wisconsin already knows who Jim Leonard is, so I don't have to explain it. But jumped to the NFL in 2024, allegedly turned down the
Joe Barry job.
The Barry cycle. Been doing well in Denver. I mean, again, very hot name on the market. Was always going to be, honestly, surprised. He kind of
had to be a defensive coordinator this offseason for sure. What team it is remains to be seen, but because Vance Joseph is probably going to go to Arizona. Denver will have a defensive coordinator opening if that does happen. And then Vance Joseph will need a defensive coordinator. The Cowboys, the Jets, the Giants are already interested in Jim Leonard. Green Bay could easily be interested.
That's not even like most of the teams, like Atlanta kept Ulrich. But outside of that, I think most teams are probably going to make a DC change when they do hire their next head coach, right? And there's, 10 jobs, head coaching jobs that are going to change up. Zach Orr for the Ravens. Again, this is another guy who defensive coordinator, head coach got fired. He interviewed in 2024 with Halfley too. An interesting guy. So, like, if we can't – so I understand the Durden hype, right?
Dirty, sorry. Yeah, it's just the perfect name too. We need a little dirty to this team. What better way to get it than add in dirty?
So one of the interesting guys to me is Carl Scott, because Carl Scott is who taught a lot of people the whole Saban system. He might have been the guy like right after Ansley with Alabama. He coached DBs for him. He is the Seahawks DB coach and passing game coordinator. He interviewed with the Commanders. If you want to go look up on YouTube, you can find look up just like Carl Scott Clinic, and you'll find like an hour long video where like he just breaks down from like a fundamental level what that defense does schematically to I don't know if it was to an audience of fellow college coaches or high school coaches, but Carl Scott's got a lot of respect from a lot of people in the league and a lot of people in college football too. So
if the Seahawks win the Super Bowl and with what McDonald's done there, they're going, whether it's Dirty or Carl Scott, like people are going to want people from that system.
Yeah. And the problem is it's not very big, right? There's only so many teams at the NFL level that are actually running it. That's how you got into the funky situations where Brandon Staley was a hot name. Right, because he was running the Fangio system. So like Fangio learns it, or Staley learns it from Fangio, and then Barry learns it secondhand through Staley, but then he doesn't know the checks and he doesn't know how you teach these certain things, right? Because he grew up in the Rod Marinelli system, right? I mean, that's who Joe Barry was. He grew up in the Rod Marinelli system and then learned the Fangio system through Staley. I'm much more comfortable going back into the match quarters world if it's a Carl Scott or a Christian Parker, or like even those guys are like first time defensive coordinators. Like at least like they've lived and breathed the system. This is what they know, right? So like, if we're going to get good at something, let's get good at something. I don't want someone who pivoted midway through their career and had to learn it third hand through the guy who actually knows how to run it in the league. Like, at least these guys have firsthand experience. Like, Carl Scott learned it from Nick Saban, right? Christian Parker learned it from Fangio at two different spots. I would rather take a nice role on that. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on who's on the board, I guess.
All right, let's see if I did not have White Cotton or Carl Scott. White Cotton I was aware of and left him off my board. Carl Scott I was not aware of, and just you talking about him and looking up a little bit, I think should absolutely be on that list as well. You said Covington, Ansley, Zach Orr, Jim Leonard, Christian Parker, Brian Flores, Durante Jones. You didn't say Raheem Morris. You did not say Raheem Morris, unless I missed it.
Okay, yeah. So I didn't have Raheem because he hasn't taken an interview anywhere.
Yeah, because he knows he's going to get the Green Bay job. I'm saying that facetiously. I have no idea.
There are people who work for broadcast companies who believe that he would be very good on television. And his contract in Atlanta is paid out. So does he want to be a DC? Does he think if he sits out? So like, these are the questions that like Raheem is going to have to answer, right? In 2026, if you, or 2027, if you sit out 2026, do you think you'll have a market to be a head coach, right? Or do you have to rebuild your reputation as a defensive coordinator, right? And if it's, oh, you think you're going to have a market as a head coach, then in 2026, do you want to be a DC or do you want to get some TV money? And like, the money doesn't even matter because you're getting paid from Atlanta, right? I don't know if he's going to be on the market. Like the Cowboys and Jets and Commander, like they're asking everyone. And Raheem hasn't taken an interview. So like, if he wants to come to Green Bay, great. But I'm not certain he's even going to be in this market, right?
Al Harris?
He hasn't gotten interviews. Like, I know Al might be just like in a weird spot where for right
his
now.
His team just did get eliminated though too, which may have played a part in that. Maybe.
Maybe. But I mean, guys in playoff teams have interviewed elsewhere. I don't know. I don't know if people think of Al Harris as a defensive coordinator, if they're just like, you are very good at teaching DB technique.
That's where I'm kind of at. It's tough to say, but that's where I'm kind of at. Different.
Yeah. He's had a little bit of a weird career because you would think that someone with the player background and all that stuff, like he would have moved up faster. But at the same time, like when you're spending your formative years playing in the NFL instead of doing what Matt did, which was go run and get other coaches coffee and build relationships with other coaches and stuff like that. Like, does Al know enough people that he could build a staff under him? Right. Like, that's another question. So
you mentioned Jim Schwartz, but I don't think you mentioned him necessarily as a Packers defensive coordinator, but maybe I missed that one.
Yeah. He hasn't interviewed anywhere. From what I've been told, he is going for broke for that Browns head coaching job. But they've asked him, are you willing to come back as a DC? And he has told them no. And I think he had either just had his second interview or is set up his second interview with the Browns. I don't know if they're going to pick him. If you're the Browns and you lose both Stefanski and Schwartz, though, I mean, I can't – like, there's way worse coaches in the league than that, dog. You can mess this thing up way worse than that.
If anyone can, it's the Browns. They're very good at that.
So – I wouldn't expect Schwartz to start taking DC interviews until, at minimum, the Browns have decided what the heck they're going to do. So,
Ephraim Banda's the safety coach for the Browns. He was a semi-interesting and up-and-coming guy. I'll just go quick through these. Wink Martindale, Antonio Pierce, Jonathan Gannon, Patrick Graham, Joe Cullen, Aubrey Pleasant, Glenn Schumann, and Gerard Mayo. Any of those pique your fancy?
Pleasant hasn't interviewed anywhere, but he was an analyst for us, right? And yep. There is the Matt connection. Wink is the match quarter. He'll do the same thing, you know, match quarters and then blitz. He's kind of like, think of him as like the Ravens tree more than like the Fangio tree.
Yep.
Those were the two names that stood out. Outside of that, I can't remember.
You're all good. I think that covers it for the most part. I'll be very interested to see what direction Green Bay goes in overall. I think it's a pretty good crop of coaches to choose from.
I just think the people, like, they set their sights on, they're like, Flores or bust. And I'm like, you guys are like, you're just going to make yourselves mad again. He can only coach for one team, and he might be a head coach for another team.
Yep. Do you have a favorite in the race as of right now?
No, I mean, I don't hate the idea of Christian Parker, right? I mean, I understand it's a first-time defensive coordinator. There might be growing pains, all that stuff. I'm sure fans don't want to hear that when a title window is potentially open. I think the idea of Carl Scott is cool. Just because
he's, I'm gonna have to research him more because you've piqued my interest with him for sure. Parker's been on the
top. I mean, that Bama tree just goes so far. Like, there's so many crossovers with that Bama tree, too. Like, everyone has done a clinic in Tuscaloosa during the Saban era. So, like, people are very aware of like the caliber of coach that Carl Scott is because there was so much exposure there. And I've only heard positive feedback about him. So that, I mean, that's my only opinion. I mean, I think, what's his name? Jones from Minnesota. I think he's an interesting guy. I think you probably have a level of like roster commitment to run that system. If that's actually what he wants to do, which if you're going to hire a guy who coached under Flores, it's probably what you want him to do. So it'd be a little bit of a, you know, the boat's direction would be changing a little bit. But I'm sure they're going to be all right. I'm just worried about linebacker coach and offensive line coach. That's where I'm at and where I've been at since the Bears game and really since midseason this year.
Assuming Flores is a no-go, Jim Leonard, Aiden Durdee, Christian Parker, Jim Schwartz are the at the top of the list for me. I would say so.
Those I mean, obviously guys I the Leonard stuff. I mean, that would be cool. Just like the local connection, all that stuff. Like, I get it.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. Either way, again, I think it's a pretty good crop of coaches and hopefully they can nail it and get somebody. Okay. I just really, really quick. I know we've spent a lot of time on this already. How good do you think Jeff Hafley was? Just out of curiosity.
I think he was good at teaching defensive backs how to hold their shell. I think the linebackers got pretty good the second half of his first year here. And probably some of most of that probably had to do with the fact that Campanelli was the guy who taught those guys, right? I think we had a week 10 bye. And then from that point on, we were averaging fewer than 20 points per game given up, including the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
And then Quay and Cooper and McDuck, like, I think all of them took a step back under Duggan this year, which is one of the big reasons why I'm like, we should probably make a change of linebacker coach. We had a really good linebacker coach who then had success elsewhere in the league, and we internally promoted, and our linebackers got a lot worse. I think we should probably change that guy. He didn't really do that much this year, and it seemed like the Packers' whole idea for 2025 was we're going to make teams out execute us. And then a lot of teams out executed us, right? I understand the defensive line was a problem for most of the season. You trade away Kenny Clark. Wyatt is in and out of the lineup. Obviously Parsons goes down with his ACL tear in Denver. And then Gary just wasn't good this year. And I don't think that has to do with coaching, to be honest. Like when you're stopping halfway running through a play, like that's not coaching. Like, I know people are like, well, get on him. I'm sure they're in the meeting room. They're like, you should be running. But then what can you do? Like, if you're not going to cut the guy, right, that's all you're doing. Everything, this whole league is built in meeting rooms right now. And we do the whole long-term financial commitment thing. So if we can't use the stick,
nothing else matters. Yeah.
If it doesn't take, it doesn't take. I think he's been fine. I also think, again, like, whatever Miami head coach is going to look a whole lot different than Packers DC in the box calling plays. So,
correct.
I
guess the more reason I ask is like,
I don't know.
Do you think it's feasible that Green Bay can stay as good or get better at defensive coordinator? Yes. Yeah, I think so too.
Well, I think their defense can get better, right? Because I think you can do some of the stuff that Halfley's doing you can get the efficiency that Hafley got and then also have a better linebackers coach and then also be healthier on the defensive line and get a real nose tackle next season,
right? Like, yeah, the defense could be way better next year than it was this year.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm right there with you. And I do. I think Halfley was good. I really liked him. It would have been a no-brainer.
I'm surprised he does well in interviews. Like,
no, for sure.
People are like,
no.
Dude, he's killing these interviews. I'm like, yeah.
No
I
kidding.
Believe
no
kidding. That. Yeah.
We knew that 30 seconds into his defensive coordinator stint in Green Bay. Right. But yeah, no, it would have been a no-brainer to keep him. I'm not saying like Green Bay was in a bad spot with him or anything like that. I do think that there is a little bit of oh my God, he's so amazing. I'm like, yeah, he's doing a good job. I like him, but I don't know that he was like the savior of the Packers defense or anything.
No. But I mean, he did do some things really well. Like if we did not know how to disguise our coverages, not this past season, but the season before when we had no pass rush, dude, we could have been like 32nd in the league in defense.
Where do you think we would have been if Joe Barry was another year? Probably 30th, 31st, 32nd would have been my guess.
It would have been bad, man.
It would have been real bad.
It would have been, it would have been bad because the book was already out on our scheme. So,
all right, Doug and Butkus, go.
Cut them. I don't think any of them are good. go get me a real linebacker coach, a real offensive line coach, and we might be cooking this year. I think those are our biggest problems.
Do you have a linebackers coach or offensive line coach in mind? I know Atlanta's offensive line coach got let go so that they can bring in Callahan. I don't even know his name. I know he's well-respected around the league, but that's about the only person that I know at this point.
Let me look at the list of fired guys. I mean, who is Miami's offensive line coach? Well, I'm not even going to look that up because McDaniel's probably going to steal, right? So we're probably a week or two away from having any opinions on assistant coaches because who knows who's going to become available, right? If Anthony Weaver doesn't get a head coaching job, maybe he does get more defensive coordinator looks, right, and stuff like that. So I'll worry about those specific names later. Just give me a
because I think Buffalo's was Cromer and Cromer's retiring.
Cromer is retiring and he's retiring pretty young, which is a little weird to me.
Maybe somebody could change his mind with a payday. Yeah. I don't know. We'll be right back. With that in mind, I'm going to add these in. Rank from not what you want, but what you think the Packers will actually do. Steno, Butkus, Duggan, Bisaccia, who you think they are most likely to least likely move on from this offseason.
Duggan. Butkus. And then it's a line. I don't think they're going to do it, but Bisaccia and then probably Steno, because Steno like really is like Matt's guy. I mean, who knows? Again, there's 10 head coaching jobs open. Each one of those guys is going to need an offensive coordinator. So I don't know if Steno is going to get poached away. But if Steno does go away, I do think, you know, Getsy is there full-time right now.
And
Hackett's there as an analyst. Like, you don't think feet have been tapping since last offseason, folks. Like, those guys – If Steno would have left for the Seahawks job that everyone thought that he was going to get last year, one of those guys is probably OC in Green Bay right now. So feet are tapping, you know. I don't think Matt is giving up play calling.
He's and not
hiring Mike McDaniel. Like, it's not happening, folks. It's not happening. I don't know who you guys think Matt is. Who you guys think the Green Bay Packers are? Like. This Bears
lost. I think there's 0% chance. I've talked to a lot about it. Of just if Steno's gone, it's because he got a play calling job, probably with Jeff Halfley. Yeah. Would be my guess. He's going to. Yeah. I think he's back. Otherwise, and to your point, if he's not, I would say it's either Hackett, it's Getsy, or maybe Mannion would be the next guys up, and Mannion would be a pretty big jump. It would just be if they want to keep him in the building.
Pretty big jump.
Yeah.
Yeah. But. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think Vrabel might have a better chance than Mannion, but we'll see.
The only thing I would differentiate, I would put Butkus ahead of Duggan is what I think.
I just think Duggan is more of a Halfley guy.
That could be. That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
That was my only thought.
That's a very good point. I just think he threw kind of the offensive line under the bus twice in his after season press conference.
They were bad. they were awful. Wildly inconsistent throughout the year. They've all played better football than what they showed.
I mean, you could make a very strong argument that just like if the offensive line plays 10% better, they win that game relatively easily.
The whole year, man. The whole year was we want to get teams in execution battles. Who cares about explosive plays, all this stuff? Like, we'll do it on third downs and when we need to. But what we really want to do is out-execute you. And the offensive line was never consistent enough. The defensive line wore down, and the linebackers didn't know what the hell they were doing in coverage. Like, that's got to get fixed.
I'm hoping that they make some adjustments there. I think those assistant positions are much more likely, to your point, than I think special teams is maybe a 50-50 of not firing, but like Rich retires or they something in that regard. But I don't know. People are going to lose their. I know people are going to lose their shit though.
They're literally going to do the same thing whether it's Bisaccia in the seat or not. They're going to care about punt. They're going to care about kickoff and field goal. If the field goal kicker is basically an independent contractor, right? So they don't really coach that position. And then, I say that, and then I get pushback from that sometimes. Like, go look at the guys who are special teams coordinators in the NFL. It's not kickers. It's the guys who used to run full speed on kickoff and the guys who were protectors on the punt team. And then back to the point, they're just not going to care about returns. They really don't care about returns. They don't care about field goal block. And they don't allocate the roster spots to it because of draft and develop, and that's not going to change.
Yeah. We're in lockstep on that 100%.
You want to save money over time, you could buy Bisaccia out and then pay a special teams coordinator cheaper down the line, but.
And get the same results probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think the organism, right, the organism that has been the Packers since 92, the draft and develop organism, has learned the lessons that it needs to from Rich, where they're like, okay, the safeties have to play special teams. That fifth linebacker spot has to be like an ace special teams guy. And if we just do that and we practice punt and kickoff, then we can be good in those units and not care about the return game. And I don't know if that's what Packers fans want to hear, but that's what's going to happen.
The Bears lost on a side note.
Oh, yeah,
we didn't get to drag them to hell, but we did get to witness them lose a divisional round game. So there's that at least.
Dude, that one throw that Caleb had, I was like, good Lord, where you drop back 25 yards or whatever and then throw up a Hail Mary.
Hail Mary in the history of the
NFL. it was 60 yard through the air, but like 14 yard gain. I was like, think I've ever seen that before. They're not as big of a regression candidate as you'd think, just based off of close games and stuff like that. Like, all their wins weren't last second nail biter stuff. I think the bigger indication of regression is just still the turnovers. I don't think it's the late game craziness. Like, this game, they did the late game craziness and lost. I think it would be the turnovers. I don't know if they can keep that up next season.
They had a massive turnover differential that I don't think can be sustained. They were what, plus 22? Houston was plus 17, Jacksonville plus 13. I mean, they've got 11 more than the fifth place team. They doubled the fifth place team in turnovers differential. Like, that's a wild number. Yeah. It's a wild, wild number.
It's not real.
That's where I think things regress. But what I said today on the live show, I think Caleb can be more consistent and better in second year under Ben Johnson.
Yeah, he still sprays balls.
Absolutely. And I think they're gonna have to get a pass rusher. They're gonna have to go out, and I think they'll be aggressive in finding a pass rusher. And they're not gonna be anywhere near.
Get rid of DJ Moore. I mean, they gotta figure out what the hell to do with that. Cause it just seems like him and Caleb are never on the same page. So
and it finally felt like they were starting to connect. They have that play in this game where it's just like, it just might not work.
One of my buddies for Next Gen Stats sent me the time when the speed when the ball came out, and then more speed when the ball arrived, and he slowed down like 6 miles an hour. Like, he just
No connection. Like, that locker room is going to blow up at some point over those two if you do not get him out of there. So I know he's got guaranteed money on that contract. Like, you might have to eat half of it and then just send him somewhere. Be like,
yeah,
congrats. Give us the fifth round pick.
That'll be interesting. I'm all for that. But Burton's going to be good. I really think he's going to be a very good receiver for them.
He's been solid. He's been solid for sure. I mean, he's a good yak guy, all that stuff.
Let's see. A couple last things. First of all, who you got this weekend, or yeah, this coming weekend, championship game?
Dude, I think Seattle's going to win the NFC. And yep. I was Rams all the way up until this point. But then, like, Matt, like, he's just banged up. And you can tell he's banged up. And the Seahawks defense is just so good. I know I said I was not going to trust Sam Darnold, and I've been pretty consistent in that in my life. But I think in this spot I am. In the AFC, I still think the Broncos defense is the best unit in that game by far. And I don't know how big of a drop-off there – like, these are famous last words, right? But I don't know how big of a drop-off there actually is between Bo Nix and Jarrett Stidham. So I might go –
we're about to find out.
I'm definitely leaning Broncos. I'm definitely leaning more Broncos than the, like, whatever the consensus is. I think they got a better shot.
Do you know what the line is?
God, I don't know. I mean, is it like Pat – well, it's in Denver, right?
Yep.
Is it like Pats by like 2.5?
Pats by 5.5 is the current line.
See, I'm taking Broncos in that. Sorry.
Do you want to guess the other line? Seahawks-Rams?
It should be like Seahawks 5.
Seahawks 2.5.
So neutral.
They're saying that the Rams would win on a neutral by a half point, right?
I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right. Seattle's a better team. All Rams.
Yeah, I would take Seattle on that.
I'd rather the Rams win. Trust me. I'm up here in the Pacific Northwest. The last thing I want to hear about is more Seahawks crap. But I think it's going to be them.
I'll end with this. You can punt on this if you would like. Our good friend Rob Domofsky, who I love, he covers the beat, I think, in a phenomenal way. He likes a Justice Moscato every once in a while, though, apparently. What were your thoughts on Rob's? I don't know if I want to call it a rant, but just thoughts on the special teams coordinator situation with Rizzi. And again, you can go in any direction that you would like with that, or you can punt on it entirely.
He's wrong about the Rizzi thing. He completely missed the point about the coaching staff thing. And that's when I shut off the video. I think I got, because they had the clips up, someone tagged me in it. I got about 30 seconds into it, and then I was just like, I'm going to walk away because I don't want to blow up on someone for no reason. But no, like, Wildy had a good laugh with me. He was like, do you want to come on? I was like, Doc, there's no one cares about a radio beef. No, like, no, literally no one cares about this. I mean, I think he made a little bit of an ass out of himself in half of the beats in my mentions or in my DMs laughing with us. So not too worried about it. I think you guys packed him up pretty good. Leave Wildy alone. Wildy is a good man. Leave Wildy alone. I had a lot of people at Wildy and at me in the same thing. Stop. Enough. Wildy and I are good. But people packed up Rob pretty good in my mentions. This is pretty funny.
I will say, I think if you and Rob would sit down together, I think you would both get along great. I think you would both like each other a lot, and you'd have a great Packers conversation.
I thought it was funny. This was part of the conversation, too, that I had with Willie. Because I think Willie got pushed by the online reaction and then was worried about it and thought it was disrespectful toward me. And all I did was laugh because it was a funny.
It was a good bit.
It was like, good. Done. Yeah. I came on this show with you a week before that happened, and I was calling, like, assistant offensive line coaches coffee runners and piss boys, right? So, like, I'm not immune to leaning into
bits
for comedy. So, I'm not – no harm, no foul.
I appreciate that. Like I said, I think you guys would get along great if you sat down and had a Luigi's pizza together.
Invite me to the Illuminati meeting.
What's that?
If you guys ever invite me to the Illuminati meeting.
We have strict initiation rituals. I've put in a good word for you, but No, you have to say only positive things about Matt LaFleur. There's certain rules that you have to get into that door. So no, we'll see what we can do, but I'll try to pull some strings.
Sounds good.
It's all funny game. It's still the funniest thing. The comments that photo gets is just remarkable. Just absolutely remarkable.
I think you hit me up like the next day. Or no, I saw the photo because you guys posted online like that day or something.
Which I suppose we should have known that Nagler was probably going to post it, but like, it wasn't like, let's do this for the gram or like, yeah, like almost, it was honestly, it was just like, we were all just having a drink and all of a sudden Aaron's like cheese. And I think we all just kind of looked and like, that was it. And like, no, oh, okay. I didn't even think of it.
It was funny. Cause you hit me up and you were like, yeah, no, this never happens. Like, this is the first time I've ever seen like Matt, like hang out with the beat like that. And we had a beer and that was it. Now people online are like, everyone's in a conspiracy to get at Packers fans. I'm like, I don't go outside, touch grass. You guys are gonna be fine.
I wish the whole thing would have been recorded so that everyone could see how just insanely innocuous that it was. Like, it would be one of those things where if we posted it for like the hour or whatever that he was there, it's everyone's turning it off at about the 10-minute mark because they would just be like, why are Andy and Matt talking about youth basketball for 10 or 5 minutes or whatever it was? Like, it would have been very boring television, to say the least. Justice, I keep you forever way too long, but I appreciate you so freaking much. Tell us where we can find all of your awesome work, what you got cooking over on Acme Packing Company.
AcmePackingCompany.com. We're going to have breakdowns on like the All-Star games that are going to be happening over the next couple of weeks. There's an All-Star game this week, Andy, on Thursday. It's called the American Bowl. They got some NFL draft picks there.
Nice.
So we're gonna do previews for that stuff because we are gonna be hitting draft stuff pretty hard. But I'm all the up to date defensive coordinator stuff. If I can get any slops from my army of snitches, that I can actually post on the website, I'll do it. I know people care about this DC thing, and it's probably the biggest move that's gonna be made in this offseason for the Packers. Don't have a first round pick. I don't think we're gonna go in free agency that much. So. This is the big one.
This and offensive line coach, Justice.
And linebackers coach. Don't let Duggan off the hook.
Deal.
A hook. A hook. Drop into the hook, Duggan. Can't teach any of these guys to drop into the hook zones.
I'll be very interested to see what this coaching staff looks like in a few weeks and how many changes there are, how many people get poached. And yeah, just going to be very interesting. We'll have it all covered, of course, here on the Packaday, acmepackingcompany.com as well. You can follow him at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.